Welcome to the Future Chia Podcast. I'm Leon Fitzpatrick.
And I'm Yos Stawa.
And we'll be talking about everything from Taoism to design to traditional Chinese medicine and everything in between.
And we talk about how to make purpose out of life and life out of purpose. Whatever that means.
Join us for our next amazing adventure into the unknown.
Yeah, it's always like, obviously it's a mountain bike trail that's pretty intense and skills are required, but it's scary. And that's what I like about mountain bike riding. It's apart from skiing, it's my favorite sport because you're so focused, so intensely focused. I mean, I go those trails that they are really steep, up the hill, boulders. And when it's wet and when it's rain, I still go out there. Then it makes it really dangerous.
Just for some extra fun.
Oh.
We're talking about rally drivers in one of the last couple of, I can't remember which episode it was now. But it's that, you know, you don't know what's around the next corner. You know, you've got like rocks everywhere and mud and dirt. And yeah. It seems like the danger becomes the reason to do it, right?
Yes, yeah. Because when you're going up a hill, up a trail, I mean, they're not wide. They're probably maybe, the trail is maybe like 1 meter wide and you got that bike, but then you got, it's not paved, road up. You got big trees around you and then it's steep up the hill and then you got boulders and then you got big branches of wood on the path and then it's not smooth. So you constantly have to really pedal very hard in order to keep actually up to the next. But you're constantly navigating how this is going to work because then you suddenly there's a wet tree branch right on the path and you know exactly if you not get the right angle on it, you're going to slide and that means you're off. And as you know, once you're up a hill, you can't actually hop back on the bike to start getting up the hill.
Yeah.
And you can't turn the bike around to go down once.
This is electric assist, right? This bike?
Yes, I got an electric bike. The reason why I got it is because that means I can go even harder onto the actual terrain because it allows me to get the grip. Because with mountain bike riding, the key is you need to keep pedaling. As soon as the moment you stop pedaling, it's when you lose the power.
Right.
And because the frame is obviously well researched over all those years. I mean, mountain bikes have come a long, 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 long way. And the frame works really well with each other. And so you become one between the earth, the ground. Then the frame of the mountain bike is translating the terrain and the dimensions and how you actually approach the terrain. It's giving you all the feedback. And then it goes into your core, into your belly. And with your belly, you have to actually direct the bike.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Like martial arts, right? Tai Chi.
Yes.
Group from Shenzhen.
Mountain bike riding is the closest to Tai Chi.
Yeah, right.
And it's the closest to skiing.
Yeah.
And so then with your belly, you have to actually be fully planted onto the path.
Yeah.
And when you're going up a boulder that is wet, and then there's other kind of woods, and then it's muddy also.
Yeah.
And then you really have to force your mind into your belly. From your belly, you have to glue yourself onto the track, and then trust.
Right. Yeah. Trust. Well, trust the tech, right? Because I guess it's a combination of
trust everything.
Yeah. A combination of the frame, right? So the frame's, is yours like carbon fiber or steel? Do you know what it's made?
Yeah, it's carbon fiber. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So is the frame which can torque and actually absorb shock and sort of absorbs vibration. The suspension of the bike, right? Like traditional suspension. The tires have to have the right grip.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're wide tires also.
The electric motor has to have the right kind of power. Yes. Then you have to have the right balance and core strength, and awareness of the trail because they won't ride itself. So there's quite a lot of things happening that have to come together to work properly, right? Because if one of those things isn't quite right,
everything has to come together to work proper.
Yeah.
And one little thing,
be done.
not harmonized,
yeah,
can actually throw you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's you're obviously fully focused on the situation. So it's amazing how much resources become available in that moment in order to actually keep the bike on track,
yeah,
and actually keep up. And I'm always surprised sometimes. Shit, I really thought I would have come off. And
yeah,
after actually, boom, I was going straight.
Yeah.
And it's a glorious moment when you conquer
that.
Yeah,
when you conquer
you
on.
Yeah, when once you you go around the corner, then bang, there's a big boulder there.
Yeah.
And then the big rock in front of it. And then you got this split second to navigate. Okay, how do we go? Because if the angle is wrong and you approach the boulder from a different angle, then you won't have the grip.
Yeah.
So you need to think really, really quickly, okay, how can I get onto it? Because fear will do the exact opposite.
Yes.
It's like you actually, the fear inspires you to do the wrong move.
For sure, yeah.
Yes?
Yeah, yeah.
This is why it's such an incredible skill. You have to actually navigate your fear.
Yeah.
And as you then navigate your fear, then you have to, because your mind wants to move away from it, but you actually have to go the angle right face on. You have to face it on. And then in that moment, when you then go onto it, you actually have to keep pedaling and dig deep.
Yeah.
You have to dig really, really deep. And then you suddenly, in that moment, you feel there's a power that becomes available due to the forces that you engage with.
Yeah.
And that's the power that you work with.
Yeah.
And then once you're on top of it, it's just accelerating.
Yeah.
It's just like, wow. It's wow.
So you're just watching a little.
It feels awesome.
A video. I think I actually might have been from the documentary. It's a documentary about Ayrton Senna, who's a Brazilian F1 driver.
Yeah.
It's one of the greatest ever. And it's a clip from there, and he's in Monaco. And Monaco is one of the most challenging circuits in the world because it's just streets. They just block the streets off. And it was one of his favorite tracks. He would overtake people in Monaco. Like, and his favorite thing would be when it rained. Like, when it rained, he would be faster. And most tracks, but there's a shot of him, or there's a scene of him in Monaco, and he's got a voiceover, and he's saying, at some point, it wasn't me driving anymore. He said something took over, because he was just one with the car, one with the track, one with the environment. He said everything just, it was sort of like he surrendered, something like that anyway, the way he explained it. It's really amazing to hear this sort of spiritual explanation for someone in a race car that you probably won't hear often them say that, right? They'll say, the skill of driving and the focus and all the suspension setup. And this is back late 80s, early 90s when the cars weren't as advanced. Like now they're very, very highly technically advanced. But then they were very much more like a mechanical thing you had to wrestle with to keep it straight. But yeah, it was just this sort of, there was no fear. There was no, I think it was something else. It was like some sort of other reality he was in. It's amazing to see that, to hear him explain it that way.
Yeah, they're discovering something that is in between that, which that's withable. They're discovering something that is hidden behind the obvious.
Yeah.
And in there you discover something, and the more you work with that, the more you trust.
Yeah. And do you think someone like him, would it just be him having done it so often that he accesses something else? What do you think?
Yeah, they access something. You can't go like, this is what I love on this latest discovery on in mathematics and in physics, that there's no proof for what actually life is. There's absolutely no proof. There's no absolute algorithm in mathematics, according to Edvard Frankel, one of the most noted mathematicians in the world, who linked the bridge between quantum mechanics and mathematics.
Yeah.
And so there's no proof for life. There's no proof for anything. So it's a paradox in itself.
Right. So there's no explanation for any of it.
There's no explanation for anything. There's no proof for anything. So it's all paradox. As soon as you're having, according to him, as soon as you have an explanation of this is the value for that, immediately another value appears, which contradicts the previous value. So you're always in a state of paradox if you're trying to make sense of it from an obvious perspective. So he said, like, his mission as a mathematician is to find that matrix that holds it all together, which in one way is something that is actually the cause of everything that what we perceive as an absolute.
Yeah.
And he said in quantum mechanics, they call it the quarks, but in mathematics, they're not real, they're not there yet. And according to, he said, that's his mission, to find something, an underlying field, that when you go into the equations, that there is something that allows you to work with that's other than the absolute. And it's because as soon as you bog yourself down in the absolute, you will have a paradox.
Right. Yes.
Because in that moment, you will have a contradictory value that will oppose that what you think is real.
Yeah, so once you discover it, it moves. It's like, nah.
Yeah. We'll say, fuck you.
Or like, oh, he saw me and moves out of the way. You go, look, and again, everyone, like, you see something amazing, you go, hey, everyone, come look at this thing.
Yeah,
and you go, look, it's gone.
Yeah, it's immediately
out there. Yeah, it's changed shape.
Bang, bang, bang. So that means you can't actually put it into words. You can't put it into words.
But that's isn't that kind of, you know, like, yeah, if you try and explain something rationally and analyze it, that seems to be the whole point, is that you can't, right? That as soon as you try and measure something, it doesn't exist. It's gone, right?
That's what he said. It's quite depressing that you can't come up with this.
Maybe you should do some meditation or something to you or something. You know, get outside of it. You know, it's depressing.
But you can't reach it.
I looked for the meaning of life and I got depressed. Yeah.
So there's something else. And that's obviously interesting for that, where they finish off as a mathematician is exactly what the Taoists have been saying 2,500 years ago.
At least, yeah.
The Tao that you call the Tao is not the true Tao. You can't name it.
So even the thing they named, they said it can't be named.
But they can't name it.
Right.
Yeah.
But they gave it some sort of, like, the Tao is a best guess?
Tao is like Lao Tzu decided that there is a fundamental reality to everything that can't be put into words, because as soon as you put it into words, you have a paradox. Bang. 2,500 years before Edward Frankel came to that realization, right, as one of the world leading mathematicians, who is the most advanced in terms of understanding mathematical formulas, equations, etc. So the whole basis of Taoism is that if you think what it is, in fact, it's the opposite. So you're constantly thrown into a paradox, into a contradiction in terms. So that's in fact yin and yang, because if you say this is yin, that's depending on your perspective, it's actually yang.
Yep.
So when okay, it's yang. No, it's not yang, it's yin. So that's why you can't explain yin as an absolute, because it needs to be in context too. So if yin is female, that's because there's male. So is, in fact, the female existing because of the male? Because without the male, the female can't exist.
Yeah, I should take a photo of my face and post it so people know what my face looks like at the moment. It's nonsensicalness, it makes perfect sense. I like that. That's almost, like you said before, like the Taoist, like she had a really good sense of humor.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how far dissect the gender orientation. If you dissect it at the moment, I think it's 94 different genders, you're going to get an infinite number soon. There's going to be one trillion genders.
Once you realize that you step away from reality in some degree,
then you always will have an opposite.
And go wherever you want.
You will never get there.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how you identify yourself, it immediately throws you. You're only on one side of the coin, but it's not the other side. You can't imagine a one-sided coin.
Oh, God. Yeah, I'm trying to now.
A one-sided coin is not possible.
Well, I guess the other side is blank, but it's still a side.
It's not a side. It doesn't exist. So you could say without...
Two-dimensional?
Yeah, that's why you can say without the female, the male can't exist.
Yeah.
Without the male, the female can't exist.
Yep.
So that means we're interdependent on each other.
Well, this is...
So when I look at my wife, I said, without me, my wife can't exist. But then my wife looks at me, without you, I can't exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why the Balinese in the philosophy always said, I am in you and you are in me.
Mm.
Yeah. So they're obviously looked at that dualistic struggle or conflict right straight away. So does you is me.
I like the idea of like a book or something that says the Taoist did that already. So anytime anyone tries to figure something out, like modern math or quantum this or that, so I know Taoist figured that out already. You know, it did that already, or they they saw that coming, or they felt that, or this because of the practice, right? Because there's something else there other than just them thinking and researching and analyzing. And you know, the stuff's great. Like, it's like people do that for a living. They really love it. But there's obviously, you're looking for the underneath thing. You have to go somewhere else to get it, right?
Yeah.
Did it. And then what's that guy said, Frankl, was like, he can't find it. It's really depressing. There's no answer.
No, that's why he said,
which is an answer.
Fundamentally, he said, according to him, he says the fundamental field is love and passion.
That. The mathematician said that.
Yeah, love.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah, that's why his book is called Love and Mathematics. So he realized that it's because if you're passionate, you have imagination. And if you have imagination, you make things happen. But where that comes from, they can't trace it down from a quantum mechanics or from a mathematics perspective. I mean, he was able to charter what quantum mechanics have considered the role of the observer. So he actually looked at it from a mathematical equation perspective, what that means, which is why he linked the bridge, why he linked quantum mechanics and physics. Still, that field really goes into something that is law.
Right.
And that in that moment, things happen that otherwise won't happen. So meaning that according to their observation, the absolute in life is to be non-absolute.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
To be in a state where it's not absolute. So you're transcending into a state that can't be measured. However, it's generating power.
Yeah.
And that power then moves mountains.
But I think everyone's
it just moves objects.
There's such a desire.
It creates positions. Yeah. You said that it's that field that puts actually the geometric orientation of objects is actually because of a field. Because when you look at a shadow, he said you've got a different experience of the shadow than the actual object, but the object and the shadow are combined, but then the shadow is a different experience to the object. So where's all that is connected to is something that comes from something we don't know where it is.
Yeah.
And that's where we go very Zen and very tough.
Well, that's where I'm going right now. Trying to figure it out, yeah.
Yeah.
But that always makes me think about, right now there's such a battle for the absolute, like political left versus right, and everyone's looking for ownership of truth and ideas and reality. You can see that, and it's very I've found that there's no sides don't work like that. You can't exist on one side. Like, you can't be the opposite to something else, you know, unless you understand the perfect opposition to what you are, and that's okay. But I think there's this attempt to take ownership or take control of something and make it into an this is truth, this is science, this is fact, this is health, this is all these things, you know. We've seen this a lot too, where it's like, and there's no questions, there's no ability to like mess with it, or you know, is that quite right, or is that, you know, it's just this need to package things up and understand them and pigeonhole them. And you see people do this a lot too. They try and go, they look at someone's culture and go, well, that must mean you're these things, or look at their gender, that must mean you're like this, like assume that they're a certain thing or a certain way because of one element, and then try and put them in a pigeonhole.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I've seen people do this a lot. Like, you go, you're trying to organize things so make yourself feel better. Like, I'll feel better if I can understand that. I'm going to take that thing and put it on a shelf.
It's a safety zone. That's why exercises like mountain bike riding is so incredibly healthy, because you can't go via the safety zone.
Yeah.
If you're facing a big boulder and a wet piece of wood, you can't go in with the observation of the safety. You have to rely on something that is within
you. Wouldn't go there in the first place. You'd be in bed still.
Yeah, I mean, I'm up there early, obviously.
Yeah. You'd go there and go, oh, this looks a bit dangerous. You're way past that.
So, but that's where practices like these sort of natural practices teach us that if I look at that boulder and my mind would say, okay, the safety zone is to face away from it, what happens now is I'm actually down, going to that state that generates the power, which then allows me to have that grit which then allows the grip and then releases the power in order to actually navigate that boulder really efficiently. But I can't, in that moment when I'm right in there, I can't actually analyze what I'm doing. It's not possible. If I would do that, I would fall off.
So
I can't do it. It's just like, that's the thing, you know, you have to dig deep into this unknown. You have to, like the Buddha said, you have to penetrate the mystery.
Yeah,
that's what the Buddha did. He just kept penetrating the mystery. So when we meditate, we keep penetrating the mystery. And in many ways, this is the same thing with sports like mountain bike riding, where you in fact follow the Tao because you actually have to penetrate the mystery.
Yeah,
and you have to dig deep into something, and then allow that information, that moment that comes forward to guide you. So that's that voice that Zena talks about.
Yeah, it just makes me think of a story my dad told me about a friend of his who had a BMW, I think it was a K75 or a K100. Is that like a big road?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sometime in the 70s. And he was going along like quite a bit too fast. It was probably like 100 kilometers an hour, maybe 60 miles an hour. On a back road, and it was dark, and he had just had his headlight, and that's it. There's no street lights, nothing. And he saw a telephone pole had fallen across the road. So, and the telephone pole is like, you know, it's quite a large diameter. And he said there was, in that brief moment, there's absolutely no way to stop, because if you stop, the bike goes down and you get hurt. He's like, all right. So he basically actually sped up, and he said he just closed his eyes and held on, and the bike just went boom, boom, over the log and just kept going.
Yes.
It's like it wasn't that. It just completely and utterly ate up the whole thing and went. So I'm like, was it the bike? I mean, I know that's pretty impressive bikes, but there's something else happened there that was experience about him probably doing something internally. Like, is it suspension? It seemed like almost like an impossible possibility where it should have hit. And
yeah, sort of if you rationalize it and then copy the experiment, you'd probably fly to the moon.
Well, if BMW knew that, it would do a commercial. You can drive over telephone poles in the latest BMW K75. Like, you know?
Yeah. The thing, you can't actually repeat the experiment as such.
Yeah.
Because if you rationalize it and take it into the absolute and say, okay, this is because of that, that moment, you most likely will have an accident.
Or go in there mindful. Like, this is a much lighter version of this, but the first time I went snowboarding. Well, the first time I went skiing, I was, 10 or 11. We were living in Switzerland.
Mm.
And Swiss kids are like, they can walk and then they start skiing. You know, you would have known this in Germany.
Yeah, I skied before I walked.
Yeah, it's what you do, right? It's snow, ski. So I'd never skied ever. And we're going to this French speaking school, and I'm just, most of the time I'm sitting around and trying to understand what's happening, because I'm trying to learn French. And we're going on a ski trip, but it's cross-country skiing. So cross-country skiing is like you wear these soft shoes and it's only connected at the front.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of like walking across. And I didn't really get it. So the first part of it, I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty easy. Until we had to go up like a little bit of a slope.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of early in the day. And it was kind of icy. It was really like probably a meter angle up. It was very, very shallow. And these kids just went sideways and up the top, and they're waiting. I remember this because they're all like, I'm at the bottom of this slope, which looks like Mount Everest to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically like eventually have to like crawl myself on my belly with my ski poles, like a cliff climber up there. And the look on their faces, it was like watching a beached seal, like trying desperately to like just crawl up a hill. They were just absolutely horrified. They're like, what is this? What is he doing? And by the end of the day, I'd kind of picked it up a bit. And then the next ski trip, they actually realized I couldn't ski. So they got an instructor and he took me down the slopes, and they told me I picked it up really quickly eventually. So it was good. But when I went snowboarding
What do you pick up?
I think it was to do with, I'm thinking about actually now, because of what I've done in Tai Chi, like my core. I remember thinking about not resisting, like going down a slope and not being afraid that I'm going too fast. Like not going, I'm going to crash, I'm going to fall down. It was more like moving with the particles of snow, and moving your body around the whole thing. And by the end of the day, I was like able to like have a lot more confidence, and I wasn't as kind of, And then there was a guy teaching me, he would go down in front of me really fast. And I was trying to actually keep up with him too. I was focused more on all these other things and not thinking about what I couldn't do when I was going to fall down and get hurt. So it was not suspension of fear, but I guess I was taken over by, I was trying to do something else, trying to accomplish something.
What, from a technical perspective, what you pick up is trust.
Yeah.
Because trust means you actually have united with the elements.
Mm.
You have met the elements. You have met nature.
Mm.
And now you let nature do it. This is the art of non-doing, as we call it in Taoism, the Wu Wei. The art of non-doing is to find the moment where we are completely trusting by meeting the forces. So it doesn't mean it's a lazy way of doing it.
Yeah.
So it's not like, okay, I trust life, I'm going to sit at home and do nothing.
Yeah.
I trust life. No, won't work.
Yeah.
You actually have to get out of your comfort zone and meet the elements. Not get off your ass and do things. It's not about that. It's about looking at the elements and face the elements and then go in there.
Yeah.
And face the fear.
Yeah.
And then when you face the fear, you keep going, in that moment, you are in yin and yang. You are in both.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're not in absolute anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're not in absolute.
Yeah.
So if you shy away from it, you are absolute.
Yep.
But if you're surrendering to it and you're going in, you are yin and yang. And that means in that moment, you are actually in that, what Edward Frankel, the mathematician, says, it's that space that is the possibility for everything.
That's what it felt like, because I think your brain maybe is trying to remember what you're doing right so you can do it the next time again. Mm-hmm. But there's something else that happens when you get to a zone. They call it the zone, right? Like when you're in a almost like this, time changes and something starts working and you start knowing you're there. And you see sports, it happens a lot, and you watch tennis players or basketball players or whatever. You can tell they go into a mode where it's that kind of...
It takes over.
Takes over, that's it. Exactly, yeah. It takes over. Yeah, but I think the end of that story was years later, you know, at least 10 years later, I went snowboarding. First time, first day. And I picked it up. It felt easier than skiing because you're not coordinating two skis and two ski poles. You've just got one thing. And you've got much more work to do when you could actually spin around a lot more. But I was doing pretty well. My friends I was with, this is in California, were like, I can't believe you're doing first day and doing so good. And I'm like, yeah, I got really cocky. And one of the ski hills were going down. There's a little bit of a jump. And I didn't realize I hit the jump until I was at the top of it. I'm like, oh, this is a jump. But I had not enough time to be afraid about it. And I landed it. And the people I was with like saw that. And like, oh my God, that was amazing. And I was like, yeah, this is so good. I'm so good at snowboarding. The rest of the day, I tried to repeat that jump and I fell every single time. Like, because I was going there going, well, what did I do again? Right, I was on this angle and everyone's watching me. It's going to be great. And I just fell worse and worse, like landed on my face and the snowboard came off my feet and this went down the hill and I couldn't get it back again. Because I was just, and I looked back and I was just obviously thinking to try and recapture that thing. And when the first time it had happened, it had been completely mindless. Like, I just went, here I am. I'm doing it. So it, the years later I went back to snowboarding and kind of like forgot everything that had happened. I kind of forgot a lot of it, but it, I'll never forget trying so hard to recapture what had happened before, but it was all in my head. It was all trying to like, you know.
Yeah, this is the question that the Taoists would ask. So if you snowboard down the hill or like a ski down the hill or a mountain bike ride on a rough terrain up the hill, the experienced rider or skier, is that skill? So if it's skill, the Taoists would say, no, it's not skill, because that means you don't own it. Because if you say I developed the skill, there's an ownership to it. In Taoism, you would say, no, it's not skill. You just repeat it over and over and over. And you learn to trust and you learn to surrender. And then after a while, you realize it's doing it for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's actually not you.
Yeah.
So the word skill is actually a blasphemy. Yeah, it's actually an arrogance, and to the point where it's because when you manage to go up that boulder in a steep hill and narrow hill on a mountain bike, of course it's only possible because you repeat it over and over and over. But when you manage it, it is something else doing it. And because you repeat it over and over and over, you develop the confidence and in order to keep going. But what really the technical term is, you trust it.
Yeah.
And the trust means in that moment, you trust that there is, because you engage with the elements, you engage with five elements. So that means you're in the elements of the rocks, of the wood, of metal, of fire, of everything. All the five elements are right. Mm. You're right in the portal of the five elements. Mm. And in there, you will discover in that interaction of the elements, the forces, because each element is a force. So the interaction of those force, five forces on you then generates the power. So you're in the center of the pyramid.
Yeah.
And in that moment, that power is actually is for you to work with.
Mm.
And in that moment, you obviously going into a state of passion.
Yeah.
That's what Edvard Frenkel, the mathematician, would say. You're in that moment in a state of passion and in a state of love. And in that moment, you actually get guided by the passion and by the love. You follow up on the passion because you don't think about it anymore. Because if you think, you're an absolute. But because you're in a state of passion and love, you're not absolute.
Yeah.
So in that moment, because it's, you could say it's the love that makes you succeed up that hill on a mountain bike or down the slope of the skier.
Yeah.
So meaning, but you're not developing skill, you develop love.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because I think like even those words, like trust, you know, trust, I think people will see it as a cognitive term. I'm going to trust that. And I think when you're doing that, you're not trusting because you're not,
it's more
automatic, right?
You have to be, so in order for trust to work, you actually have to actually engage with the elements. So this is where the Taoists say trust is actually an empirical, it's like it's a qi involvement. Mm. You know, like, so if I trust a situation, I have to be surrendering to it. That means I have to dig deep. If I look at a situation and, for example, I'm gonna do a business adventure, let's engage with a business deal, I have to trust the outcome. But what I do in that moment from a Taoist perspective is, I dig deep into my core,
yeah,
where the elements are available for me. And then I merge with that chi feel. And from the chi feel, I get a feeling of passion,
yeah,
and a feeling of love. And that actually then guides me. Right, so at that moment, I know what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the same as in sex. It's the passion and the love in that moment of the sexual union that tells you what to do.
Yeah.
It's not like that you go into analysis first and just kind of put on Facebook, what move should I do in this sort of situation?
Oh, you'll probably do. Yep.
Yeah. And so you're not doing a mental reflection on a situation.
You do a poll, what percentage of people think you should do it this way?
Yeah.
Just that way. Again, I think this is probably happening. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously in that moment, you're not guided anymore.
Yeah.
And in that moment, you lose the power.
Yeah.
And the power is the result of the forces acting on you.
Yeah.
And that's the crucial element for what is requirement for health. And that's what I see lately, why so many people are getting unhealthier.
Yeah.
Because they're not engaging with this state that is underneath the absolute.
Well, yeah, because the absolute was, this is how, you know, this horrible narrative about what it takes to be healthy, which is this very one-sided chemical based thing. And even before all this shit happened, there was still the, you know, pharmaceuticals kind of going, this is how you fix things, this is how you this and this is how you do that, right? It's all become mechanical and empty and fake, right? And
yeah,
that's absolute. You do take this and this will do this, the end. I'm like, yeah, yeah, it still brings so many people to the, you know, lining up for it. So there's something there that must seem to work on the surface for people or something, you know, like, because if you look at any other business model where the thing kept failing, you eventually wouldn't go back to it. You know, if you kept like, you stuck with a certain airline and they just kept crashing, you're like, I'm probably going to switch airlines, you know, or, you know, a certain type of car model, the car brand you have, and I'm sticking to, you know, the Daihatsu Nibiru or whatever. And if it kept blowing up on the freeway and killing anyone around you and you get injured, you wouldn't go, I'm going to buy another one of those. So there's something about this health thing where people keep returning back to this way of doing things en masse without being able to ignore all the things that don't work about it and that the side effects and all these other things, you know. And again, this is a much bigger story than what's just happened in the past few years.
Yeah, health is, according to my observation, 40 years in clinic, health is one of the most has become one of the most complex territories now. It's just like it has turned into an enigma. So you can't just say, okay, have salad bowl for lunch and that's health.
People do that though.
And you can't say do this and that's health.
Yeah.
Because I've seen too many different contradictory terms now. Yeah. I've seen people who have the wrong, in brackets, the wrong foods are healthier than those people who do all, in bracket, all the right things, but they don't do what the other person does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like the industries, like they attacked butter, you know, and they attacked meat and they do it endlessly because they're trying to get everyone to eat their product, like sugar and processed foods. But they went up to fat. That's got fat in it, should have this, and it's full of fucking sugar. And sugar's way worse, right? So endless cycles of this stuff where they get a few people, pay them some money, those experts then go, yep, this is bad, this is good. It hits a newspaper and everyone believes it, and then that's it. And it dictates decades of history. And, you know, and then the solution to those things is then, oh, you know, try this medication, try this, even though their diets are backwards. And then, like you said, have a tofu salad because that's healthy for you, you know, or vice versa. Or
someone said it's healthy.
Exactly, yeah. And then, I don't know, I guess it seems on the surface, but after a while, it doesn't work, you know. Yeah, it's confusing.
There's a fundamental principle to health. Obviously, that we need certain kind of foods, but fundamental underlying all that is the person's ability to enter that state that's between the absolute, where passion and love is.
Mm.
Because once you enter that state, you have access to power generation due to having engaged with the forces or the five elements. That is responsible for health. That on the surface, looking at a theoretical model for health, will not come close to.
Yeah.
Yes. So if you get up early to face the elements, obviously that's one key element.
Yep.
Underlying all health is getting up early.
Yep.
Yeah, so this is there are principles. So if you don't get up early, you're actually not engaged with the elements. Because why don't you get up early? Because you want to sleep in.
Yep.
So that means you give in to laziness.
Yeah.
So now you're doing the first step towards ill health.
Yeah.
Because you actually have to face inertia.
Yep.
And going into the portal of the five elements, you have to face the discomfort. So there's no way out of it. So like at the moment, because we've got the mid of May, end of May, and it's getting cold.
In the Southern Hemisphere?
Yes, in the Southern Hemisphere. So we live here in the mountains. It gets up to 4 degrees in the morning. So when you talk to people about getting up at 4:30 to face the elements and do your breathing and then going up a mountain bike track, it's usually no.
Yeah, why would I do that? Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's also, you're talking about...
So when I suggest on Facebook, for example, that health is...
Yeah.
I like the perfect diet means if you get up early to exercise and then have a nice warming breakfast, you're doing more to weight loss than if you would follow up a calorie restriction diet. Yeah. I've seen this over and over. I can prove that from all different
angles. People read that and they go, oh, I'm not going to get up early.
Yes. You must be joking. There was one comment that said, you must be joking. I'm not getting up early. It's winter time. So, of course, it's facing the element that's the more challenging facing the element is, the healthier it is.
Yeah.
It's not, that's the key.
You look at what Wim Hof's been doing.
Yeah.
You know, even just like it's one thing alone. He's talking about cold, and that's not everything. Mm-hmm. But he's talking a lot about everyone's believing that they can't do anything anymore. You can't face this. You can't face it. It's too cold. It's too hot. You can't, like, he's like, we're not supposed to be like that. We're not supposed to be afraid of everything all the time and worried about
it. Yeah, the reason why that is because if you don't face the discount for what happens is you're not entering the portal.
Mm.
Yeah. After a big experiment, like climbing up Mount Everest with
shorts,
few shorts. And so what did you do when it came down? Oh, I had a Heineken and a roll mops.
That's pickled herring, right?
Yeah, fish. Pickled herring. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and a Heineken.
But he's got a very strong consistency,
so,
right?
Yeah. I mean, I personally, I drink wine every night.
Yeah.
And I don't make any fuss about it. I love red wine and I refuse to consider it as a problem because I face the elements.
Yeah.
If you face the elements, you have freedom.
Yeah, I think this is the
it's the freedom.
Yeah.
So if it comes nighttime, and the fire is on and I have like jazz music is on, I love red wine.
Yeah.
And I drink two glasses and I love it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it makes me a bit tipsy sometimes. Yeah, it's great.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah. And but then next morning comes 4 o'clock, bang, I'm up and face the element. I go into the portal of the elements.
Yeah.
And then for the next 3 hours, I'm fully engaged with the five elements.
But okay, so explain that a bit, because there's elements, people go elements, oh, you mean go outside and be with, you know, what if you have nature, there's different type of elements, right? It's engaged with.
So you don't have to.
If you're in an apartment, for example.
Okay, you know. If you live in an apartment, you still can do it.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's irrelevant. But you're facing a situation where your body needs to be taken into a, you need to align your body, and that requires to go, okay, how can I dig deep into my core?
Mm.
So if you do a complicated yoga move, you dig deep into the core.
Yeah.
If you just sit there and meditate and have like an app on Calm app, and you're just residing in, and you're sitting in comfort in a chair, you're not going into the portal.
No.
Yeah, of course, the result of that is you don't have you didn't engage with the elements. Of course, now you don't have as much freedom with the things in your life.
Yeah.
So that means you have to be far more conscious about what you eat, far more conscious about what you do during the day.
Yeah.
If you go face to face with the elements and you put yourself, dig deep into the mystery, that means you dig deep into the body's possibilities and you're facing the fears of that, what the body can do. You have far more freedom during the day.
Yeah.
So then at lunchtime, you can eat more of the foods that other people can't.
Yeah.
You can have far more in terms of you have more space because you've already been in.
Well, you've spun up your flywheel, you've built up momentum, right?
Yes.
And that's kind of going, it's spinning.
So if you live in an apartment, the idea is to try to find a way to do the exercise outside so it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's so anything that moves you out of the comfort of the zone, it needs to be a challenge. It always needs to be slightly, obviously don't shock the body, but not shocking the body is not good either. So you find a way how to go in.
Yeah, I found personally, like, because I've got space, I can train if I have to, I can train at home. I can, a little less space in my apartment. And I have a lot of furniture, so I've got like just enough space to train. I've got weight stuff and I've got enough space to do Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm.
But I always feel better, train better when I go to the park.
Yes.
Like, and this, I can't always do that, but when I do, there's just enough difference. Mm-hmm. And obviously you've got trees and grass and the air is different and you're around nature, which I think makes a huge impact. Yep. But when I can't, I do that. But I always get more out of it when I'll go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
When I get away from that environment. Because I live there too, so it's, you know.
Yeah, for example, you could just, for example, if you live in an apartment and it's cold, just put big jackets on, big beanies, and go on the balcony or with the window open.
Yeah.
And do your first moves and face the cold.
Yeah, something. Yeah.
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 And then every day, face the cold a bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is not a cold plunge. This is just meeting the elements. Then the next thing is, if it's in an apartment where it's warm, like whatever, if the weather is warm, then going to look into in which way you can put the challenge into your body. For example, if you start juggling, if you trying to stand on one leg and lift one leg out. And the idea is to entering the zone where your fear will take over and will guide you of not wanting to do things.
Oh, yeah, the balance board.
Yeah, balance board.
Balance boards. There.
Yeah, balance boards are good.
Yeah.
So anything that, and then you lift up the balance board, you make them higher and higher and higher.
I don't know what that.
Okay. You rise up the level and the idea is to make the exercise more and more complicated.
Yeah, I was standing on one leg the other day and that was okay. And I tried to jump and that didn't really work, but I'm going to work on it.
Yeah. So there's ways, but then obviously everyone is nearby somehow a park or a forest.
Yeah.
And so the idea is obviously then, okay, get up early in order to have time to get to engage with.
Yeah. But you still do like your dips between like two bins, wheelie bins, right? Like whatever. There was no excuse not to do something. I remember you'd find, wherever you were, you'd find something
find
that you could turn into a gym.
Always find a gym. There's always a park with a... There's, monkey bars or the kids' playground. And there's like, and garbage bins are everywhere.
Yep.
So if you put two garbage bins parallel to each other, you actually got a perfect dip.
Yeah.
So you can do some push-ups and dips between the garbage
bins. Urban gym.
Yeah, and if you obviously, it's a really good exercise to do the dips between garbage bins because the wheels can really make you lose control.
Yeah, and you've got maybe the smell, you know, have to overcome.
Yeah, yeah,
there's a lot of stuff there to deal with.
Yeah, yeah, and then sometimes you slide and bang and the garbage bin just falls over and there's shit everywhere. And then you have to put everything back in again. And, then you realize you do it in front of a neighbor or a house where they don't want that.
Playing with the garbage at 5
Yeah,
in the morning,
then you got like, some arguments happening.
Yeah, who's this guy? Yeah.
Weird looks.
Just go, I'm the garbage man.
Yeah. Perfect for discomfort. Perfect to meet the elements.
Yeah, good resistance. Yeah.
And but I can see a development lately that really highlights to me that we are in a shift of a massive transition because everything is getting more and more absolute.
Yeah.
And like we've seen that with the pandemic, like when people started follow the real science. I mean, that was like one of the most hilarious comments I've ever heard.
Hey, we caught on really well, though.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people follow that.
Fauci called himself science. Yeah. I am science. Yeah. That's particularly... Mm-hmm. That should have been the moment when everyone was like, this guy's an idiot. Yeah. But it worked. You got everyone, don't you know the science? You know, like, yeah. I don't think you do, though.
So then, yeah. And then obviously I've lost a lot of friends because they followed the real science and I followed the wrong science.
Yeah, the wrong science.
That's yeah. Right. And so then obviously massive debates on Facebook.
Yeah.
You don't follow the real science.
Yeah.
This is the real science. What you say is wrong science.
Yeah.
And obviously we've never seen this before. I've never had those debates ever about what is real, what's wrong.
Yeah, no, it was particularly, yeah, yeah. Amazing to watch how it was the speed at which people suddenly adopted that too.
It became a catchphrase. This is real and this is wrong.
You put it on your little, you know, people to put things around their profile photo.
Yeah.
You know, trust the hashtag, trust the science, you know.
Yeah, it's just incredible.
Yeah,
like it's whatever. Just like how many times, like even family members, I lost the trust of family members because they took the vaccines, I didn't, and they said, what you do is wrong and what I do is real.
Yeah.
And so I've never had that ever before in 10 years when it was like, okay, shall I take a hepatitis B
vaccine? Usually it's vaccine? Like, it was the other like, way around.
No debate. You were not considered right or wrong.
None of that stuff. No, because it was like, it was normal. But it was like, it used to be in the past, if you did something, everyone's like, why are you doing that? Now it's you not doing it. Why aren't you doing it? Right? I'm like, what is this? Where it's just been completely reversed. It's never been like that.
Yeah. This is why I believe we're moving into this. Is that from a Taoist perspective, the more yin and yang become absolute. Like when yin becomes so yin before it moves into yang, it appears to be absolute.
Right. So then what happens?
And then boom, it switches into yang.
And then.
So that's then, yin and yang is right. Is the flow of the transition.
So we're headed for yang then?
We're moving into, it's a transition into next.
Right.
So.
I see. Yeah. It's not,
yeah right. So it's from, not a, from, yeah, yeah. from a zodiac constellation, I think it's like every 4,000 years it moves into different
One of the ages. What is it called? Kali Yuga. Is that one of the.
Yeah, that's one. That's ones? Another one. But there's also star constellation like the age of Pisces, the age of Aquarius. And
also the Chinese zodiac, because this year is Water Rabbit, which is supposed to be weird, and it's weird. Let's admit, it's weird. Next year is the Dragon, and I don't think the Dragon's a very calm animal.
That's going to act more.
It's not a chill. You don't have a pet dragon and just hangs out. It's pretty intense. So,
but it doesn't matter how we look at it, the stars act on us, and the constellation of the star is like a portal of the five elements.
Yeah.
And in there, due to the constellation of the stars, because each star is a force field, in that, that means it generates a power.
Yeah.
And that power is actually impacts on us.
Yeah.
So, and whatever the constellation is, one thing's for sure, it is we are on the brink of a transition towards something new.
Yeah.
And I can see that by the fact that people are now trapped in absolutes, as before that they never were. And when we are in a set of absolute means, it will switch over into the next. And what we're experiencing now is a state that makes new values available to us very soon. Because when yin reaches its peak, in the yin is also the yang. So it actually, the information of the new is already available. So in order to navigate the next, it's like the mountain bike rider when it's navigating the boulder and the wet wood behind it and what's around the corner. It's like, you know exactly there's going to be something new.
Yeah.
But I need now dig deep into this field, the portal of the five elements, where the passion, where the guidance is. And then out of fundamental underlying that absolute, so there's no boulder, there's no wood, it's just something takes over and it guides me.
Yeah.
And it moves in the then, it switches into the next.
Yeah.
So in many ways, people who are holding on to the absolute are the ones who are facing a big wet boulder by doing an observation that is giving into fear, which then causes the wrong move.
Mm.
And then you actually fall.
Yeah.
Whereas what to do about it is only possible if you know, because you experienced it, but then it is not because you learned it, you discovered it.
Yeah.
Yes. And so that's available to all of us, meaning we all are facing the end of an old era, and we all can see that there's something new.
Do you think that's everyone though? I mean,
not everyone.
If you're sensitive, you are. I feel like I've told people, you know, and they don't seem to get that. But like, surely, even if you must get some sort of sense. But I think it's more just what they're told is happening on a like political or global level, right? Like, I think it's more the news that dictates what they think about something. They're not feeling.
If you're holding on to what is absolute, you will actually, will lose yourself, because what is absolute is not the truth, because the truth is in between. So if you're holding on to what you think it is, then also you will be left behind. So we're living in a time now where the transition is obvious to those who are sensitive to it, and we know for sure that the way life is heading, it can't continue the way it is anyway for much long.
Mm-hmm.
So we can see the signs of something coming to an end, but we don't know what the new means.
Yeah.
So, and it's not our job to know the new. It's not our job to be guided towards the new.
Yeah, I'm getting a sense of that. I thought in the past, a lot of my energy was put towards, you know, establishing what was wrong with everything and then trying to use that as a footing to go into the next thing, but you get so easily dragged down by people who like that. They actually like, somehow revel in the fact that everything's going wrong and it's a reason to point fingers and blame everyone that we've done everything wrong. There's something like they get like a kick out of it or something, and they kind of live in that space where they're angry about everything and you're destroying the planet if you do this, if you use a coffee cup, you know. It's, you know, like there's this, the sense of that is growing out of control when it's like maybe people like do and behave in different ways, which is overtly negative, which just makes everything worse.
Yeah, if you face,
ruin the message.
If you focus on why that boulder is in your way up the hill on the mountain bike, and why the big branch is wet and why it is there, you won't make it up the hill.
Yeah.
You won't succeed.
Yeah.
So the only way is, how can I get around it? It's like an acknowledgement of the obstacle, but not to blame the obstacle.
Yeah.
If I go up that hill on a mountain bike and I use anger, I won't last long.
No, it's not going to work.
Yeah. If I'm going to use blame and frustration and being pissed off
at the boulder for being in your way, Yeah. If I could get off your bike and try and push it out of the way.
If I look that fucking boulder.
Just go and smack it, you know?
Yes. Yeah, go out and start up and
get in space.
Yeah. Punish it. Then I'm not entering the portal of the five elements. And entering the five elements is where the guidance towards the new, and that's where the realization of what is next is coming also forward. But most importantly, I feel connected to what makes life.
Right.
If I feel connected to what makes life, I not only feel healthy, but I also feel supported, and I feel I'm part with everything. I feel like I can see this is all just like, it's just the winding path up that hill.
Yeah. And is it, because for you, if you heal people or not treat them, I guess is a better word, right? Like it's people have issues and it could be a lot of things, right? It could be like what they see as being purely physical issues versus also like what they would see as being mental issues and all these things, which you treat in a very different way. Obviously, like it's not about the individual thing. Is it about like, I don't think it's worth trying to convince people mentally about right and wrong and this is what we need to do in the future. And I think there's a little bit of a threshold when you try and tell someone or try and convince someone to join your side, for example. Hey, come over our side. We're like this and move this and create a different future that way. Somehow that sales doesn't seem like it works. So I think I already know the answer to this question, but you might have said it before. It's like, as you think and as you do, you become that. And people see that and they go, I want to, That's something in there for me. I'm going to go that way as well. Versus trying to like verbally convince people about joint, you know, like moving towards the future in the right way. Cause like this has always been this challenge for me. Even when I started design, it was like, I was very, very concerned. And I still am about how things are manufactured and resources and where they come from, what we do to nature in order to have these things. And we dig up all these resources and we make things and we just throw them away and we buy new ones. And there's something there that this could be done so much better. But the ways I've looked at dealing with that have always changed. I've spent years and years inside of a corporation and try and make that corporation move it a little bit, but the result might be slightly less bad phones or products. Or on the outside of that is like, do I teach students about different ways in which to design and make things? Then that feels like you're trying to convince them of something that they don't care about. And that's not quite right either, because they have to feel that as an issue they want to deal with as well. So that's kind of not the right thing. So looking at these different ways of going after something feels like it's still mental and still trying to, you know, it's like when you say to someone like, hey, trust me, or do you trust me? It's like, well, now you said it out loud. No, you know, like, you know, it's like, that's that you put it into words, which need to feel or do in a different way. And then it happens naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess this is like this void in front of me. I see, I'm like, I'm trying to move to this, contribute to the next thing and build the next thing and help with that. But I just feel like there's not a lot of people that I can actually work with in that way. You know, it used to feel like I did. Maybe that was wrong. Maybe I thought the people I thought I was going to be working with aren't the right people, and that's okay. Like, I get that. But it's like you kind of walked out into a, you know, put your foot on a rock and a cliff, and you're like, well, there's not that many people around here either who are doing that. It doesn't, and I think a lot of people feel like this, and I'm definitely not alone in that sense, that you like suddenly it's not isolated or alone. There's some other word for it. It's like you I guess the support you seek or the verification you're on the right track has to come from inside. But you also do need to be around, work with people, and you know, like, I don't know. I don't know if it's a question or a observation.
It's like what you're talking about, there's only two ways to live. You either follow the Tao or you oppose the Tao. So you either follow the way it is, or you got your own agenda and oppose the way. So what you're discovering is like, people are not trying to discover the way, but are aligning life with how they see it, how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And that's not possible, because this universe is made for everyone. And so these 8 billion people have to work in harmony. And Taoism is all about the harmony. Harmonious interaction, harmonious function. But it's, so if I follow my preferences as in accord to how I perceive it, Well, then I'm going to clash with someone because they have a totally different idea. So that's why we got conflict here, because we got 8 billion individuals on this planet and we got 8 billion ideas about how we're supposed to live.
Yeah.
But there's only one way to live, because there's only one planet and there's only one reality that holds it all together. So you can't have 8 billion different realities. That then we wouldn't be able to function together. So the Taoists understood that long time ago, and understood that underlying everything is, it's the Tao, the way. And if we follow that way, then we can't clash with others.
Yeah.
Because others are, the other people are like our brothers and sisters who work together. We are all on the same mission to follow the way, and we help each other to find how to move into the way. So that's why without a spiritual practice, this will not be possible to master or to perceive, because whatever that way is, it's not in the absolute. So if I wake up and I get, I know, listen, I immediately engage with my phone, I go to computer, I do emails, I'm in the world of the absolute. So obviously I can't see the way, the Tao that is underlying all that, that has nothing to do with the absolute.
Yeah.
So of course now I'm engaging with the email, I'm in the absolute A. Then I'm getting another Facebook message, I'm in the absolute B. So I'm constantly now like a ping pong ball.
Yeah.
And so that means I'm always the mathematical value that constantly reaches a new paradox.
Yeah.
Because I get the first email and then get the next email, it contradicts the first email. So the first email gives me that certain emotion, then the next email triggers that emotion. So I don't actually after a while know how I feel.
Yeah.
Because I constantly, and after a while I get disappointed of people because people constantly disappoint me.
Yep.
Yes. And so that means if I say I get disappointed about people, that means I'm actually living in the absolute. I'm not transcending into the way.
Yeah.
So if I go up that mountain bike trail and I get disappointed about the boulder, I'm not inside the gut. I'm not inside the space that guides me via passion and love.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if I get disappointed about that wood in front of me, I'm missing the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't just employ like 20 people and clear the path.
Well, if you got a lot, I mean, I'm sure people do that, you know.
Yeah, but then you don't get the experience.
Yeah, was it with Dictator? It was like Ceausescu, who apparently, like, if you had parade, he would have people go in front of him and, like, paint the leaves green if they were brown or something, you know, that kind of stuff. When you're obviously, like, on a mental, you know, issues there. Like, a lot of power, a lot of money, and go, oh, I don't like that. Let's change it. You know, it happens. But that's obviously quite an extreme case.
Yeah, but that means you will never. If you do that, I mean, if I do a mountain bike trial in the city on a footpath that's paved and it's completely predictable,
it's not really a mountain bike.
And after 20 minutes, I'll finish. Yeah, okay, I did a workout, but I'm not getting that passionate involvement. I'm not getting the excitement. I'm not getting the state that the mountain bike, the trial in the forest generates.
Yeah.
So, and that trial in the forest is completely dangerous and risky.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's ridiculous to do that.
Yeah. Also, I mean, like if you're an electric mountain bike in the city, you're not doing anything. You barely have any work you're putting in, right? You're just kind of coasting along. You don't know.
That's very important. You don't have the electric bike. The electric mountain bike is not designed for you to be lazy.
Yeah.
It's for you to because it's got the boost function in order to get to navigate a boulder that otherwise you won't be able to do. So it allows you to do things that otherwise you couldn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not I'm not doing that bike because of laziness. It's because it allows me to go deeper into it.
Yeah.
So there's obviously enormous discovery possible that otherwise wouldn't be possible. But then there's hardcore mountain bike riders who snide at e-bikes. So I can see both of the side, because before that I had mountain bikes you know, the Yeti, which was a really beautiful mountain bike. And so I discovered the mountain bike riding via not with e-bikes,
yeah.
So, but with incredibly well-structured frames, which allowed the same engagement that the e-bike did. It's just the e-bike allows me to go a little bit further.
Yeah, go a bit further.
And I can go deeper into the elements.
Yeah.
It's absolutely, that track I'm doing in the mornings here in the mountains of Mapleton, there's a track there. I can't see how you can do that without an e-bike.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It's so complicated. And to navigate those boulders, because you have to keep riding. So, and keep riding means I'm inside that portal of the five elements.
Yeah.
And so if I stop, I'm outside the portal, and then I start analyzing and thinking.
Yeah.
And then that moment I can't navigate it. It's really tricky.
Yeah.
That I have to, that's how you discover the Tao. You discover the Tao by going into the mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the mystery is essential in order for us to be guided into the internet. We need to go into these unknown factors.
Yeah, not seek the absolute, but seek the mystery, the unknown. You know, the stuff you...
Yeah.
It's like, also, like, doesn't that just sound a lot better anyway? Like, why go for the things that are concrete and known and trusted and that one else agrees on? That sounds like so fucking boring to me. It's not even funny, you know, like...
Yeah.
So I guess, like, hit the trails and engage with the mystery and don't worry about the, you know... Yeah, if you hit a boulder, go over it, go around it, maybe sit down and think of, maybe have a chat with it. I don't know.
Engage with the boulder.
Engage with the boulder.
Engage with the obstacle. Face it. And let the inner knowing, the inner voice, guide you.
Yeah.
This is the key that we need now.
Yeah.
As we now moving into something new. I mean, interesting to see even the... Edward Frankel, the mathematician, said that we are in the brink of a transition, and he referred to it from a star constellation perspective. He said the age of Pisces is coming to an end, and the age of Aquarius has started. So he, as a mathematician and quantum mechanic, he actually also acknowledged that the forces of the universe are impacting on us and forcing us to acknowledge something new.
Yeah.
And that's why he said... That's why he said that what we need to acknowledge is that the key forward is imagination. The key forward is passion. The key forward is love. So meaning in there, we're discovering value that otherwise were not possible. And this is exactly what I see with people now who come into clinic, that I need somehow guide them into how can you feel that is within you that will guide you, rather than getting trapped in the absolute.
Yeah.
And so they're presenting all kind of pathologies and names, and the idea is to transcend the name to go into the unnamed.
Go into the unnamed. That's good. Go into the unnamed, go into the unknown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go into the unnamed, and then you will find your way forward. I'd say we need to dedicate a whole podcast on that, how to descend into the unnamed.
Unnamed. Let's do it next time. So happy trails.
Yeah, the happy to keep is the keep engaging with those boulders, whatever those boulders is. If you live in an apartment, go and get a landscaper to put some rocks in your living room.
See,
that's what I would do.
Yeah,
yeah, and I mean, I did things like that, obviously, in the past. Or put like big rocks on your balcony, and let's go and get a really tiny little BMX bike and see what you can do with that, and make it wet, and see how you just like develop skills, but they're not new skills. Develop the trust by going into states. So it requires juggling the elements.
Yeah, juggle the elements. Yeah.
So if you live in an apartment, get a BMX bike.
Yeah, that's homework till next time, so get on it. All right, till next time.